Destination Freedom. The Chicago Defender and Station WMAQ bring you Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, interwoven in the pageant of history and a part of America's own Destination Freedom. Today, Destination Freedom tells the story of the famous scientist Dr. George Washington Carver in a chapter entitled, The Boy Who Was Traded for a Horse.
They never let him forget the horse. He was to remember the horse long after he'd forgotten his father and mother. For in a way, the horse was to set him free, if he were worth the horse. That was the question. Was one skinny, sickly little boy worth Farmer Carver's sturdy stallion? That was the question the slave stealers had stopped in a Missouri valley to decide.
Is this all you got, Farmer? A horse? Ain't you got no money?
All I got's my horse. Ain't that enough?
Hey, it don't look like a good trade, Tom. If you ask me...
Who's asking it, Slim? The farmer's putting it up to me. The boy and his mother's mine, not yours. Now be quiet a minute.
All right, Tom. All right. You settle it.
Farmer?
Yeah?
Open your horse's mouth. Let's see his teeth.
Whoa, Pacer. Whoa. There. Well.
And teeth look all right. Give him a whack, Slim. Turn him around. Oh.
No knots on his legs. But, Tom, a slave boy will fetch a right good price in Louisiana, won't he, Jackson?
Sure he will, Tom. They're dying for slaves down in Louisiana.
Sure.
Will you keep quiet? Farmer. You've been following us since we took the boy and his mother from his master. Now, what's she to you?
It's my wife that wants them set free at any price.
And where's the price?
I'm just a cotton farmer. I don't have no money.
Slim?
Yeah, Tom?
What do you think?
Well, a horse ain't bad, ain't too old. But you being short-sighted, Tom.
Yeah, Tom, in 10 years, a horse won't be worth nothing. Boy'll get more valuable as he grows. Then in 10 years...
In 10 months, you fool, the war'll be open, the slaves will be free. Won't be able to sell them nowhere. We need another horse. Farmer?
Yeah?
Tie the horse to that tree there and go down the road a piece while we examine him good. Come back when the sun sets. You'll either have the boy or the horse.
What about his mother?
The horse might be worth a boy. Ain't no horse worth a woman and a boy. Now go down the road and we'll call you when we decide.
How'll I know you won't run off and take them both?
You don't. We could take them both if we wanted them both. Maybe we don't want them both. Come back in a little while and you'll have either the boy or your horse. Well, what you standing there for?
The farmer went down the road. And when the sun set and the purple shadows crept over the valley, he came back toward the tree. He heard a horse galloping away. His horse was gone. The boy was there, small, thin, sick and shivering. Farmer Carver was disappointed.
Is this what I gave my horse for? Well, don't lay there. Straighten yourself out, boy. You look like a question mark. At least live long enough so my old woman will know I did what she said. Lord, where'll I get another horse?
Was the boy worth the horse? To Farmer Carver, it was a bad bargain. To his old woman, it was different.
Martha! Martha!
Yeah? Moses?
Well, they took the horse, but I got the boy for you.
Where's Mary? You didn't bring Mary.
The boy was all I could get. He won't live. He's sick.
He's got to live. Oh, thank the Lord, Moses. Mary's boy's still alive. He's trembling, and the cold's tearing his little body to pieces. Oh, those miserable slave stealers. Get the doctor.
And pay him with what? Answer me, woman. What'll we pay the doctor with? The bugs and the boll weevils eating us out of house and home, and now we got a Negro boy to contend with.
He's Mary's child, and Mary was my best friend. She always helped us any way she could. Now I'll nurse her boy until he's well again.
Yeah, then what'll we do with him?
He'll stay here and live on the farm. He'll be a carver like us. I'll call him George. George Carver.
George. That horse would have helped plow the cotton crop. We live off the cotton. The boy'll never live to hear you call his name.
Is that boy? Moses, will you stop eating a minute and tell me?
Where he always spends his time, out in the woods, picking up weeds and worms. I told you we should have kept that horse, Pastor Buddha.
Now you know George has helped us a plenty around the farm since he's been here. You said so yourself.
I've said he's growing up strange. Don't like it.
He's a good boy. And you mustn't be so hard on him all the time.
10 years, and I'm no closer to him than on that first day. He's always a-planting something. Ain't there enough cotton for him to plant without him planting every weed he sees?
He's lonely.
Yeah, he's crazy. The neighbors say so. They hear him always talking to the flowers and turtles like he was one of them.
Oh, George! George!
And the questions he asks, he ain't normal. When I was a boy, I didn't give a hang what makes grasshoppers hop and what makes grass green. And the way he loves flowers, it ain't natural. Biscuits, please.
He does have a feeling for anything that grows. It's time we sent him to a town where there's a high school. That's what he wants.
I'll not waste my money on him. More butter, Martha.
John? Oh, here he comes.
I'm coming, Mama. I'm coming.
Well, what you got in your pockets? You're all puffed out. Where you been?
I've been out in the woods.
What did I tell you?
Here, clean up and get your supper.
All right.
What's that you're holding behind you? Let's see it.
Oh, it's just an old turtle I picked up in the creek. Why does a turtle always...
You say? Questions. There he goes again.
What's this in your back pocket, George? Oh, land sakes.
There's moss. It grows on the north side of the trees.
What's in your pockets besides the bird's nest and those flowers and that rock?
It's a frog I found.
Oh. Hey,
come here, Jumpy. Jumpy.
Get him off the supper table, George.
Will you get him down from here? Take that frog out of here. You see there? See what you've done? Now get out of here.
Don't talk to him like that, Moses.
I'll talk the way I feel. Since the boy's been here, we've had nothing but trouble. And I've had enough.
Blame it on the cotton crops. Don't blame it on the boy.
The crops was all right until we traded the horse for this daydreaming boy. I wish I'd kept the horse.
Moses, you had no right to say that to the boy. George, why do you look that way? Moses don't mean half, he says. George, sit down and eat.
I'm not hungry.
The boy was hearing the horse gallop off, and he was not hungry.
I'm not hungry now. I want to go to the school you were telling about.
Well, we can talk about that in the morning.
In the morning. I'll be a long way from here. A long way.
With Martha's kind help, the boy packed his knapsack, stuffed his pockets with seeds and leaves, and walked the 60 miles to Boomtown. Sat in a classroom by day and slept in a woodshed behind a Negro blacksmith's house. Until the owner came in one night to stack the wood.
Who's in here? I see you in the shadows there.
John, help! Somebody's in here!
It's just me, ma'am.
You? Who are you? Whose boy are you?
Nobody's. I'm George Carver.
Every boy is somebody's boy. What are you doing in my woodshed?
I live here.
You're a mean little thief. John, you hear me? Call the law.
Please, I'm not a thief. I go to school.
You'll go to jail and the devil for this. That's where you'll go. What will the likes of you be learning in school?
To learn how to make things.
What things? Oh, John, will you come out here?
To make things, ma'am. Look, like this.
What are you pulling out of your pocket?
This, I made this.
You made this?
Uh-huh.
This is a flower.
I grew it.
Only God can make things grow.
And I learn how from him. If you let me live in the shed while I go to school, will you?
Emma,
Yeah, but you call me, you in trouble.
It's all right, John.
All right. Rag him up in the woodshed and you say all right. What's he looking for?
God.
Oh. Well, I'll be frank with both of you. You won't find God in the woodshed on a cold night like this. Now, come on to the house and get some supper.
The boy who had been traded for a horse came in for supper and stayed 4 years working with the blacksmith. He cooked and scrubbed and learned what the school had to teach him about the soil and the sun. His questions outgrew the town, and the blacksmith John and his wife Emma argued over where to send the orphan.
Emma, I've already decided that George is going north to college. Isn't that right, George?
Yes, I sent my application to Highland College, Emma.
Running north when there's plenty of work to be done right here in the south. What's his education for?
There's nothing he can do here, Emma. Missouri ain't the place for him. All he's put in his head about plants and pollination and stuff's wasted, yeah?
I still say he shouldn't run away.
And what'll his chemistry do for him in the cotton fields? Tell me. And besides, look outside.
I'm looking. Come away from the door, George. The crowd's gathering again.
What is it, Uncle John? It's been that way all day. What's the matter?
A Negro was lynched in the next county. The fever's still running high. The boy'll not stay here, Emma. That college took your application, George. Go north where there ain't no Jim Crow, no discrimination. You got a letter from Mr. Peabody, the president of the college. He'd welcome you with open arms.
Yes, I'm President Peabody, but...
Carver. George Washington Carver's name.
Yes. You see, there's been some terrible, terrible mistake.
Your letter said to report to school today.
Yes, but we didn't know you were a Negro. You should have told us.
What's the difference?
The difference is that we don't take Negro students. Never have.
Oh?
I'm sorry. Try some other college.
You're sure you're the young man who applied to enter this college?
Of course, I got your letter accepting my application.
Let's see the letter.
Here it is.
You wanted to enter what school?
I wanted chemistry.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Our chemistry classes are filled.
But I'd take botany to start off.
That appears to be filled also. In fact, we just don't seem to have any place for you at all, Carver. Try another college.
We're very sorry, Carver, but our quota's filled. We just can't accept Negroes and Jews. Sorry.
And the boy was traded back and forth between the colleges. And in his head he heard the clatter of the galloping horse as the colleges weighed the question of whether he was worth admission. Until he quietly entered Iowa State College and buried himself in books and laboratories. But in his pockets, the flowers still grew. And on the campus one day, he was stopped and questioned.
Young man, what's that sticking out of your pocket?
Oh, you mean this plant?
Yes, yes. May I see it?
Certainly.
I used to be an expert on these things. This, I'd say, is a Mencilia ornata.
I didn't know the name of it.
I noticed it because the nearest one grows quite a distance from the college.
I pick it up on my way here.
Well, then you live a long way from the school. Huh? No wonder you get here at all. Don't you like living in the dormitories?
You haven't been here long, mister. Negro students are barred from the dormitories here.
Oh, I see. Well, then, suppose you move in with me. I live on the campus.
Then they'd kick us both out.
I hardly think so. I'm president of this college. Come on. We'll have dinner and talk this over.
The boy again went to dinner and stayed 4 years to find the answers to his boyhood questions, to work in the field and laboratories, to learn the laws of the microbes and molecules. He had come to learn. He stayed to teach. He took his students out into the field and showed them how to reap and sow, showed them how to shuffle the molecules and change nature into a dozen different products. The word went around that he could raise corn on a wooden floor, that he was a magician with molecules and test tubes. Then President Wilson had a word with him.
Professor Carver, we've gotten another telegram asking if we'll release you to work at another college. I thought I'd take it up with you.
My answer's the same. Tell them all that this is where I'm staying.
But the requests kept coming in. And one telegram came from the South. It said...
Dr. Carver, we're trying to build a school for Negroes here in Alabama. We need help. Trained scientific help. Signed, Booker T. Washington.
And Carver remembered the clatter of the horse and the barren farm he grew from. And he saw how easily the crops grew in Iowa and threw away the letters until one said...
Dr. Carver, if it's money you need, stay where you are. But if you want work that will test every theory you have, come to Alabama. If you want to work and see what really can be done with soil and sun, leave Iowa, come to Tuskegee. Come to my office, and we'll plan our fight. I've taught reading and writing. I've taught students how to make good bricks, build walls, and be carpenters. But nothing will grow here for long. Look out at the land. It's a lot different from Iowa, isn't it, Professor?
Yes, it is, Dr. Washington. Yes, it is.
Carver looked, and as far as the eye could see, there were the bleak stretches of yellow and red soil, erosion gullies, rocks, and a few struggling plants.
It's easy for a chemist to be a genius in a state like Iowa, but can you grow anything out there? Out there are 500,000 black and white farmers, mostly sharecroppers. Some sick, some starving, and they don't know how to farm. That land's all they've got.
Yes, and that land is worn out.
Well, you tell them that. I can't.
Well, I tell them.
We thought you'd start out with a class in farming. Maybe then you can get across the idea of scientific planning. What do you think?
Maybe.
The new professor was worried. He looked around for a laboratory and found an empty room. There were no orderly test tubes, no trained assistants, but boys off the farms who gathered around the new teacher and waited. He told them,
"Before we go to the farmers, we'll have to build a laboratory here. And we'll search the fields and farmhouses and dump heaps for bottles we can use as test tubes. We'll gather hollow reed from swamps to make tubing. We'll pick up jugs, or skillets, or saucepans, anything. We'll weld the steel together and make plows. And then we'll go after the land."
They gave him a small plot of land to work on. And the older farmers came by to look and laugh at the sight of a professor behind a plow.
Yep. Well, bud, look at the Yankee professor showing us how to plow.
Yeah, look at that.
Hey, professor, you got the horse hitched the wrong way. You ought to be where the horse is.
That's right, man.
The farmers laughed and laughed, but they stopped laughing when they saw the thin, stooped professor planting cowpeas between the furrows.
Well, Professor, you didn't come down here and show us about planting cowpeas, did you?
It's cotton we got to plant. Yeah. If you can tell us something about cotton, talk.
Go ahead. If you can, don't waste time calling us out here.
Yes, you're right. It's time I told you what I'm planting.
It's time you found out you're in Alabama, not Iowa. It's cotton we need, not cowpeas.
Cotton I came to talk about. How much did your crops yield last year?
Well, I'd say nigh on 2 bales.
The year before this? Yeah.
About 6 bales, then. Yeah. It's been going down each year. But it's the only cash crop we can raise around here. Ground's not good for nothing else. This ain't Iowa, Professor.
Then you've got the answers to why I'm planting cowpeas in the ground instead of cotton. Huh? The ground around here is tired of cotton. It's got to have a rest. Yeah. Let it rest this year,
and it'll yield double next year.
Oh, we heard that before from you, smart professor.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Look, look, cotton's a money crop.
Cotton will bring cash. There's not enough money now to buy food to keep a man's kids from dying before his eyes with plague.
He's talking crazy.
I'm talking to help you. Now, trust me. Forget about planting cotton and let the land rest with another crop. Do that, and I'll find a way to help stop Pellegrin.
Yeah. How? Yeah, smart professor. How?
Bring me all the different weeds and shrubs that grow around you. Even the ones that you say are poison. I'll show you which ones you can eat to stop Pellegrin.
And the farmers brought piles of weeds to the professor's laboratory. And he came out with the weeds cooked and put them before the farmers.
What's that mess?
Now, right around your homes, in the yards, there's weeds you can eat that will stop pellagra. Try them. They're good.
That weed's poison, Professor. Everybody knows that.
Poison.
Now, the ones I've selected are not poison, if cooked this way. Now, look. I'll eat them for you. And if I live, will you rotate your crops?
The farmers watched the professor eat the weeds, then took his recipe and turned away from cotton for a year. And the next year, when the new cotton started growing, the counties of Alabama had an early celebration for the great crops. Professor Washington came into Professor Carver's laboratory.
Carver, you've done it.
What's that?
What's that? Man, get away from the test tubes for a while and look about the country. It's the greatest cotton crop in Alabama's history.
Yes, but I don't like it.
What are you talking about?
Cotton is a cash crop, ruled in the South with an iron fist. He who owns the cotton owns the people who work it. I came back here because I know the land has got to grow more than cotton if the people ought to be free.
I see. And what do you have in mind?
I don't know yet. I've been working on some experiments trying to find a way out.
You've done enough. Your formula for turning mud into paint's been picked up by the Agriculture Department. Alabama mud's the most popular mud in the world.
And Alabama poverty is the worst in the world. Until we can grow something besides cotton, you're doomed.
Have you any ideas what ought to be planted?
I have plenty of ideas. I just don't have any ideas on how to get rid of the cotton.
The professor walked home from his laboratory and saw the cotton ready to burst into bowls with the biggest crop. But that morning, a farmer had even bigger news.
Professor Carver! Carver!
Yes, what is it?
Look, I found one in the cotton patch this morning.
I can't see it. What is it?
The boll weevil.
Oh.
Where there's one, there's a billion. What'll we do?
Well, there's nothing to do but plow under the cotton and plant another crop.
What crops is there the boll weevil can't get at?
You call the farmers together with my garden. I'll tell them.
The farmers for 100 miles gathered around the professor's little garden and saw him lift a familiar vine.
Here's a sweet potato and a peanut vine untouched by the boll weevil. Next to it was the cotton. The boll weevil ate it. Now I say again, plow under your cotton, plant sweet potatoes and peanuts.
Well, I don't know much about this peanut crop, but what can we lose? Boll weevil's got the cotton.
I'd stake everything on the crops he's talking about. I'm willing.
Me too.
What can we lose?
Yeah, I'm agreeing.
The professor won the first round. The farmers plowed under their cotton, sprinkled the ground with poison and planted peanuts and sweet potatoes. And when the crops came up, the leafy vines stretched across the state. And the farmers came around. They had a few polite questions.
The peanut crop's planted, grown well, Professor.
Yeah. It'll be the biggest peanut crop the country's known, some say.
I was wondering what we do with them when they're ready to be picked.
Peanuts and potatoes are food. You could find a market for them.
I wonder.
Professor Carver went back to his laboratory to reshuffle the molecules of the peanut and potato. But the crops were almost ready to harvest, and some were rotting in the field. Panic swept over the farms, and the farmers came over to visit the professor at his home. They threw open the door.
There he is. There's a Yankee professor told us to plant peanuts.
Come on, Professor. We want to talk to you.
What do you want here? What have I done to you?
You've made us sink everything we had in the fool's crop. Now the fields will rot with them.
Nobody wants to buy peanuts, Professor.
Oh, let him alone. Ain't his fault. Too many peanuts on the market already.
We took his advice and planted them.
Let's give them back to him.
Wait. I tell you, you did right by planting peanuts. And there's not enough on the market.
Don't tell us. You tell the guys who buy them.
Yeah, thanks to you, we raised enough peanuts to supply a circus for 10 years.
Look, farmer, there is more use for your crops than for circuses and for pleasure. I'm working on ways to use them. In a few more days, I'll have something that'll make them buy out all your crops. Give me a little more time.
Time? I read where they're even planning to admit foreign-grown peanuts into the country, tax-free.
Yeah. There's more peanuts than anybody will ever use. Give them to him, boy.
Let me go back to my laboratory and finish experiments. I'll have something to make you proud of what you planted.
Well, here's some you can have to work on. Hold up them bushels of peanuts, boy. Dump them on them.
When the farmers had gone, the professor picked up the peanuts, took them to his laboratory, gave orders that no one was to come in. And for 6 days and nights, they watched the light burn while he stripped down the peanut, took it to pieces, and began to rebuild. On the 7th day, he staggered out of the laboratory.
Carver, are you all right?
Very well. Tell the farmers not to destroy the crop. Let me rest and wake me Monday. I am going to Washington.
Professor Carver slept, and when he woke, filled his satchel with jars and tubes from his laboratory and went on his way to Washington to place the case of the peanut before the Senate committee in a crowded hearing room.
Has the last witness been heard? Is it agreed that peanuts will be excluded from the tariff bill, then? If so, we'll proceed.
Just a minute, Mr. Chairman. One more witness from Tuskegee Institute, Dr. George Washington Carver.
Oh, another witness? What can he say that hasn't already been said?
If you will listen to him for 5 minutes, Mr. Chairman, there's some manufacturers in the house who would like to hear him.
The chair will recognize Dr. George Washington Carver for 5 minutes. Can you cover your subject in 5 minutes, Dr. Carver?
No, but I can make a start.
What are you here for? To testify for or against a tariff on peanuts?
Oh, I'm not interested in tariffs, gentlemen. I was told the Senate wanted to know if it were worth the while to support the peanut crops in the South. Now, if you'll wait until I lift my suitcase to the table and open it, I'll present you with the peanut. First here, made from the peanut, are some inexpensive insulating boards. This is synthetic coffee. Paper, flour, milk and cheese, plastics, stains, cream, powder, buttermilk, mucilage, ink, starch, tapioca.
Professor Carver pulled out of his bag 300 synthetics made from the Alabama peanuts. The senators listened. The manufacturers rushed home to order the southern crops. The boy, who had been traded for a horse, put the peanuts back into his bag and went to his laboratory to reshuffle the molecules. The sound of the horse still clear in his head.
You've just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Dr. George Washington Carver. It is brought to you by the Chicago Defender newspaper and station WMAQ. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of George Washington Carver was played by Fred Pinker. Others were Hope Summers, Gladys Williams, Oscar Brown, Ken Griffin, George Kluge, and Arthur Peterson. The special music was written by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Bobby Christian. This is Hugh Downs inviting you to be with us again next week at this same time. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.